Today is December 28th, 2018, TMO's birthday. This is episode number 494 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, actually, that's not necessarily true, whatever, you can go to show, you can see our show notes at macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at facebook.com/groups/context machine. Now, today, my guest is John Keat, professional curmudgeon and all around grump bucket. Mr. Keat did a stint at Next Software back in the day, and he's been writing for the Mac Observer on and off for 18 years, believe it or not. Hint, I don't believe it for a second. He's got a potty mouth, a keen mind, and is quick to fly off the handle. And even when I disagree with him, I love hearing what he has to say. And with that in mind, I present to you John Keat.
Just a little, Jim. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing well. So post, what do we have? Post Christmas, pre New Year, short week this week, short week next week. I personally need the next 4 days to be able to recoup from the previous seven.
Nice. Nice. That means it was a good time.
It was a very good time. It was a very good time. I went back to Texas to spend Christmas and a few days with friends and family. And what'd you do?
One, I'm a fan of Texas, so I'm happy that you got to go and see your family and friends and whatnot. That's always fun. Mm-hmm. I did nothing. I did a really, really nothing. It was an unusual year for me in that. But I'm on the people that watch our other podcasts will know. I've been on the edge of doing a renovation for quite a long time, and I'm super double probation serious about it this time.
Yeah, Brian, I was about to call shenanigans.
It's totally happening. But yeah, we're kind of in the midst of this. It's coming down to the last few details, insurance companies and whatnot had to come, actually came by today. So we're kind of in the midst of dealing with that. So my girlfriend and I were home and enjoyed our each other's company.
Was it quiet, or were you like doing work?
Super quiet. Although yesterday was really cool. There was I think it was some kind of electronic transformer that blew in Queens, which is just across the river. Mm. And it was only the second time in my life I had something this weird. The sky lit, not just the sky, but even the buildings across the street were cast in blue light. So to put this in perspective, the transformer blew easily 7 or 8 miles away from us, if not 10 or so. So think about how much blue light you have to generate to light Manhattan across the river from Queens.
Oh, it sounds like it's more than meets the eye.
Yeah,
you see what I did there? Because it's a transformer. You see,
Jim, you're very clever. So yeah, it was weird because nobody knows what was going on. And, you know, it shows you the interesting thing about like things. There's no like there needs to be like a micro social network where people that are immediately confused of what the hell is going on can go and chat, because Twitter is not going to have this. The reaction is going to be delayed for 30 minutes or so. And in the meantime, it's freaky because the sky is blue, the buildings are blue, you don't know what went on.
Was it a flash? It was a flash, though, so the skies didn't stay blue.
No, it stayed blue for like a good 6-7 minutes.
What?
So whatever blew in the transformer, if you Google it, you'll see. Whatever blew in the transformer, it was some kind of special, crazy, eerie light. And the funny thing is most people that were in the proverbial dark, like we were like, is this aliens or something? It was just too weird.
Okay. I can't believe that I've somehow not known this.
Yeah. Just search for blue light transformer Queens. That should come up.
Oh,
there's videos of it too.
Was anyone hurt? I hope not.
I didn't see any reports of who may have been hurt. Selfishly, I'm glad this happened during the wintertime, because if it happened during the summertime, replacing a transformer when all of New York City needs air conditioning is a bad time for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't hear that anybody was injured. I pray nobody was injured.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was a weird, it's one of those, you expect the transformer to blow, like to have, maybe I could see the blue light, but to your point, like you would think it's a flash for a second. Right. At most. Yeah. Yeah. This was minutes. This was weird.
Fascinating. All right. I can't wait to learn more. And speaking of praying.
Wow. Before we even got in the first topic, we were off topic.
Yeah. Welcome to ACM with John Keat and Brian Javin.
Shocker.
Speaking of praying, let's talk about the pornification of software.
I gotta say the 20 years,
yeah,
you're just getting smoother and smoother with those transitions.
I'm not so sure about that. Now, this is your title, and this is true, folks. I have no idea what John's thinking about. He said, I want to talk about the pornification of software. And I said, stop, sold. I don't care what it's about. Well, it sounds like a great topic, but I honestly have no idea where you're going with this. So I'm actually going to turn it over to you. Go.
Okay. So this is my thesis that software has been pornificationized or pornified or whatnot. Basically since the App Store came out. And I came up with this theory because on Twitter, I follow a bunch of Apple Mac software developers, and you enduring hearing me bemoan how I think all software has sucked and continues to get suckier and suckier for quite a while. It was interesting to see developers bemoaning the same thing. And they were more technical about it, like what Marzipan should be and having two libraries a good thing, or should there be kind of one mega library that kind of breaks out into individual platforms and whatnot, and all kinds of geekery like that. But what was interesting to me on top of that was that they were just bemoaning that a lot of software really stinks, and there isn't the craft of software. There are no more Bill Atkinsons folks of that caliber crafting software is that. Now, of course, that's hyperbolic there. I'm sure there are one or two or three that do that.
But I got to take you off on a tangent immediately.
Sure. Shocking.
Those people exist somewhere. What are they doing?
So part of my pornification theory explains what they're doing.
Okay.
Which is they're leaving software.
Well, so, where are they going?
Well, Bill Atkinson has gone into photography.
No. That's the previous generation.
Sure.
And I mean, Bill Atkinson leaving software is not about the sorry state of software. It's that Bill Atkinson is a badass and can do whatever he wants to do.
And Andy Hertzfeld, I would throw into that caliber, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like today, what do you think the people who would have been?
What are they doing? My theory is only losers in life go into software anymore. And people of that caliber are generally leave software because they can make better money elsewhere. They may go into, if they're super techie, they may go into
cryptos.
I guess crypto is one of them, but they may more into investment, like investment banking and places where the money congregates, so to speak. And into huge mega software, like, you know, for Google or whatnot, where it's centralized cloud-based garbage, frankly.
Or what about like AI?
Yeah, AI. There is no AI. All of it is machine learning. I do know what you're saying. But you're the guy that claims to be mostly pedantic failure at that. So just pointing that out.
Excuse me. Screw you. And secondly,
for being right. I know why you're saying that. It's for being right. And I know that's the worst time. I accept your apology.
I take it if that's what you think is going to work for you. So what you're saying, like, if that's the case, these super brainiac people, they're, you know, the super creative types, because again, they do exist. They are, it's not like they're not being born anymore, because I mean, Bill Atkinson is incredible. I don't know if he's a, you know, 1 in 100 years kind of incredible. Same thing with, you know, Andy Hertzfeld, et cetera. So these people are disappearing into fields where their individual contributions don't necessarily stand out.
So maybe, but I think there's better money. And here's why they're running away. I mean, it's an interesting question. I haven't really done the research to see where those goes. I'm being hyperbolic and overly broad and generalizing.
Your name is John Keane. It's what you
do. Exactly. But so here's what happened. And there was another thread there with people bemoaning that Apple is unfair because they're charging 30% for distribution and they're evil and capitalist pigs. And boy, they're so awful. And my theory is, what's your word for that? Your PC word? Balderdash. Balderdash to that. Excuse me. Balderdash to that. The 30% has nothing to do with it. Not to mention 30% is very decently fair. People forget what distributors and big box software used to charge.
Anywhere in between 50 and 75%.
Yeah, at the lowest, you got 40 and yeah, easily 75%. So, you know, and on average, you're doing probably 50-50. So it used to be, and people were used to paying high prices for software.
Like and you had to pay for end caps. You remember those days?
End caps?
Yeah. So like at a retail store, like the, you had to pay as the maker of the product. I mean, we still have end caps and you still have to pay for them, sure. but we just don't have software in stores anymore.
Sure. It's kind of why the movie industry, when it was forced to be broken up for antitrust reasons, they chose distribution, right? Distribution is where all the money is. So they control the distribution and the movie theaters actually make very little money. And the studios pull in 90% because distribution is where you glom onto it. So that these distributors and big box vendors were making 50% is not surprising. But software costs a lot more then. So QuickKeys, which is a great example, it's the kind of the old time equivalent of Keyboard Maestro today. It sold for forever for $99. And if there was a 50-50 split, the software developer was still making $50. Today, my buddy Walter, if he has to buy an app for $2.99, like Shortcuts used to cost before Apple bought it, he would check with his accountant, you know, if that's a good deal or not. And because when Steve Jobs introduced the App Store, he introduced this concept of 99-cent apps, and it so cheapened people's expectations of what software costs that nobody wants to buy software. They want it for free, and if they do you a favor, they might pay 99 cents for it. And anything above that is insane, right? No one wants to pay for value. I just bought Xscope on the Mac. Xscope is basically just, it's like rulers to measure screen things. It goes for $50. Most people would be like, are you kidding me? Paying $50 for rulers? Aren't there like 30 apps out there that do free rulers? And there are. But, you know, this product is a bit more crafted. But I'm old time at this point. Nobody wants to pay for this. So it's not the 30% cut that's killing them, because before it was a 50% cut and they were doing kind of okay with a lot less volume. It's that the actual value of software is so low to get people feel they have to offer it for free or sneak subscriptions or something in there to make ends meet. So that's part of
free to play, but in app.
Sure. Sure. And don't get me wrong. Would it be better that Apple, only charge 15%? Sure. Could they still make money? Probably. But, you know, is it unfair at 30% compared to what the world was before then? No. And Apple is owning, considering that movie theaters charge 90% of the take of a movie, right? Today, in a move from the movie theater, and they leave almost nothing for the movie theater. It kind of shows you that distribution, you know, by most, almost every other measure, Apple's distribution deal is not bad. And the real problem is the devaluation of software. And it's partly because of the price points that Steve Jobs and the App Store introduced that just devalued everything. The other part of it is that the democratization of being a software developer. Any idiot can program today. Today, there are apps on the App Store made by 10-year-olds. I'm sure those 10-year-olds are very special and awesome, but the point is, it is so easy to make bad software that almost anyone can do it. And then what that creates is this sea of garbage. There's so much garbage software. It's so hard to find the quality product that the quality products get lost in this mire. Plus, they get beaten to death from all sides because, well, there's 17 free ruler, screen ruler apps. And if there is a good programmer that does this craft, they get lost in this and it's hard to find. It's the proverbial, needle in a haystack. So they get drowned out by that. So to the extent that there are some good ones, they get beaten by this low quality programmers being cheap and good enough.
To the bottom. So reintroduce. I know that some of our readers have heard me talk about this. And
so hold on. Let me just make one more point.
I'm sorry.
The whole pornification, why is it pornification? It's just like porn, right? Nobody pays for porn anymore because it's all available for free. So, and it doesn't matter that there is some, shall we say, low cost porn producer somewhere because it's good enough for, people's porn needs and, they don't care. About the, high production values or anything like that. And to the extent that there's a craft in that, nobody cares because the schlock product that's free is good enough. And it's a problem that the porn industry has. And some of their solutions are eerily like some of the solutions that are happening in software, one of which is porn is now making a lot of low rent producers. How they make money is webcams and whatnot. So there'll be a porn provider, he or she or otherwise may do a show, and it's kind of one-on-one or one to many people, and they're doing that. And it's kind of a subscription model, right? Like you pay to play in that regard. And it's the software world, in a little bit of the same way, is they're making it pay to play. Like you need to do a subscription model, but it's still a rush to the bottom, right? There's too many providers. Nobody cares about the quality. And what that creates is just all software has gone downhill because of it. Anyway, that's why I called it the pornification of software, just to tie into the title. So I apologize.
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. So here's the thing. I know I've talked about this on this show. I think I've talked about it on TDO. We may even have talked about it on Pop.0 once. Nonetheless, here's the thing. Buddy of mine took, when he was getting his business degree, one of his courses was, I forget the guy's name. This is I can't remember the guy's name. He did this thing where he said that Apple screwed up by allowing anything to be free. And that if Apple had made the cheapest app be 99 cents or $4.99, that the qualitative and quantitative race to the bottom would not have been the case. And he does here and he gave several examples explaining this. The first one is this. You stop and help an old lady who's on the side of the road and she's had a flat and you change her tire. And you just did it to help her out. And she offers to pay you. You say, no, 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 you don't need to pay me. So, no, no, I insist. And now she gives you 50 cents. And now you're pissed. Clearly, 50 cents is better than 0 cents. Is this correct? Do you agree with this?
Sure.
But the perception is that, oh my goodness, you were happy to do it for free, but now this lady thinks that my time is worth 50 cents? Screw you. Second example. There was an experiment done. There are two boxes of chocolates on, I think it was a supermarket checkout stand. So, you're waiting, cashier's ringing you up and you're waiting for that to happen. And right in front of you, there's two boxes of chocolate. One of them is free. And one of them is, I think, like a nickel or 25 cents, whatever. Doesn't matter. People took the free one. Now, and then the other part of the experiment was that people would be presented with two boxes of chocolate. One of them is a nickel and one of them is a dollar or a quarter. I forget which, but it was more. When the entry level price was higher than zero, people chose the more expensive one. When the entry level price was zero, people chose the zero one. Right. And so his argument is that by allowing apps to be free on the App Store, that it sends everybody to the free apps, and which completely devalues the entire product. And that if Apple had only put some kind of price as the cheapest price that software could be sold for, that we wouldn't have had the same rush to the bottom that we've seen.
So I think that, and I do remember that story, and I did consider that as in part of my pornification of software kind of theory here. And that deals with psychographics, right? What he's talking about. And it's very real, and I think there's something to it. But what I'm also talking about, in addition to the psychographics kind of devaluation of which I am in full agreement with your friend and your, you know, kind of thesis there, that's part of the problem. But there's also a supply side problem, which is there's an oversupply of garbage. So it makes it very difficult. So now if you take your dollar chocolate, but there's also 9,000 other chocolates there. And even if most of them are 5 cents, it becomes very difficult in 9,000 chocolates to find that one. And that's part.
If the minimum price was $1 or $5, the really crappy software would never get any kind of foothold. And I think would probably not be developed.
We disagree on that. The problem is there's a sea of this, right? There's this.
Well, there's a sea of it now because right. You can get free stuff, and the free stuff exists out there.
Yeah, but I think when you have an oversupply of cheaply made software, you're going to have everyone producing at $4.95, right? Or if that was the mark that you wanted. Yeah, but
people are going to be a lot more choosy about what they spend their $4.95 on. Those crappy software people would not be able to sell an app.
Maybe, but I disagree. And the reason I disagree on this is if you could think about it, if you go to Walmart and there's probably 35 different kinds of wrenches, right? And you're just in a sea of wrenches. There might be the one that is the one golden wrench that people, you know is, but when you don't know anything about wrenches and you walk in there and you see 3,000 $4.95 wrenches, you're probably not going to be too discerning about it. It's difficult to be discerning about it because it's the needle in the haystack problem. And that's part of the glut of making programming so easy that the vast majority of the programmers are just garbage. There aren't craftsmen in it because they don't have to be.
I agree.
So we disagree.
And the craftsmen are not, at the same time, the craftsmen are not rewarded.
Right. It becomes very difficult. And so the craftsmen will go elsewhere. So, I mean, again, this is an overgeneralization. There are a lot of problems with blah, blah, blah. It's not accurate in every way. But I think it explains a lot of why software has gotten worse and worse and worse and worse.
Hey, you know, can I take us on another tangent?
Sure.
Back in the day, back when the platform wars were a thing, right? Windows versus the Mac.
Sure.
Mac software was hands down better than Windows software.
In the vast majority of cases.
In the vast majority, obviously there were exceptions to that. And in particular, for instance, one of the things that I had always noted, and again, this is back in the day. This is like the late 90s, early 2000s. In a given category, the Mac might have 1, 2, 3 offerings, but 1, 2, 3 of them would be excellent. Windows might have 10 offerings, and 1, 2, 2 of them might be excellent. Mm-hmm. And those are obviously broad, sweeping stereotypes. But my point is that I thought at the time that one of the reasons for that, well, A, you had to be really good to survive on the Mac. But two, it was easier to program on Windows. It's a lot of Microsoft made it super easy to program on Windows, and it was very difficult to program on the Mac. There were all kinds of tools.
Particularly well, right? There wasn't as much of a gradation, right? Like from a mediocre to bad program was instantly palpably bad, and a good program, you know, was much more clearly distinguished. And to your point, there was a lot less offering, so it was even more easy to distinguish it. Versus when you have almost anyone can throw together, you know, an app, the super bad to the just the bad to the par to the par mediocre to the little bit better than that. There are so many apps in all those categories that it's really tough to you just get a blur, like, to differentiate it for the average person that's not, you know, kind of expert in the field or done an unreasonable amount of research to kind of discern that. That's part of the problem. Yeah.
It's interesting. And I think that is applying that same argument is applying in a different way today, which is part of what your point is, that it's so easy to program that just about anybody can do it. And again, the flip side of that being that the craftsmen, the artists don't get rewarded, and therefore there's no one to stand out. Now, that's not to say that there aren't some good apps. There are some great apps, and I think that in some cases, a lot of the Mac stalwarts are producing some of those great apps on both Mac and iOS. That's kind of interesting. In particular, I'm thinking of groups like the Omni Group, companies like the Omni Group, Smile.
Sure, but a good portion of those are also forced to do subscriptions only.
Yep.
And I want to personally, I find that to be from the spawn of Satan. I want nothing to do with it. Other people's mileage may vary on that. But, you know, they're forced to kind of these models to some degree, just because the economics are what they are.
Yep.
If there wasn't that much noise, they would be that much more successful. Right. It would be a little more clear what the hit products are, what the really great products are in each segment.
So what's the solution for that today? Right. We can't fix I think in many ways, John, I think this the democratization of the ability to code has tremendous benefits to society as a whole.
Sure.
Right? It's not all bad that just anyone can throw together an app. Yes, I realize that there are absolutely garbage apps that come out of that, but at the same time, I love that more people are empowered to do something, even if they don't do it well.
I totally agree. It's like most things in life that, you know, we talk in black and whites because it makes it easier to understand the kind of the concepts. But there's tons of nuance to this. Your friend and your theory are potentially one step to curing this, which is to force a better price structure in the app store to say, look, you can have free apps. That's fine, because people are still, you know, are free to do that. But the minimum price of an app is $5, right? And you have to go in $5 increments or something like that.
Apple even do that now?
Well, Apple can do whatever they want. Totally own it.
They can, but could they? I mean, like, there would be an enormous amount of pushback from you know, the kind of people that leave a 1-star review on an app because it costs 99 cents.
Yeah, but those are, you know, I read an interesting book on Silicon Valley. It's terribly written because it just excerpts from many, many other books. Basically reads in the first person excerpts from different books, but it goes to a point of theory, and I'm blanking on the title. I'll look it up in a sec. But one of the things that Facebook, when they finally added the wall, right, the history flow that didn't used to be part of Facebook way back in the day, when they added it, everyone lost their mind, said, we're leaving Facebook. They protest. Everyone was very virtuous about how awful this is. And then Facebook ignored them. And why they ignore them? And the inside kind of sausage making of this book was great, because they said, well, we had all the data. We looked at all the people that were protesting the most, and they were using the feature absolutely more than everybody. So they were just lying. They were totally lying about what they were doing, right? And so Facebook ignored them, and it just became the norm, right? So in the same way, sure, a lot of people are going to, users are going to complain that they're going to, you know, start protests, blah, 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 blah. They're still going to come back and buy their Starbucks for $5, and they're still going to come back and buy an app at the App Store. End of story.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I don't see.
The name of the story. Just so you know, the name of the story is "Valley of Genius: The Uncensored History of Silicon Valley" by Adam Fisher. It has a lot of lore that you have not heard about in other books. In this book, that is new, particularly on some of the Xerox PARC stuff, some Apple and Steve Jobs stuff. It's written like poo. It's just terrible, especially in audiobook format. It's awful. But the information is primo in it. So there you go.
Fair enough. I don't see Apple actually correcting this at this point.
I don't think they care. Look, they don't even care about the Mac, so they sure as heck don't care about the App Store, which people have been begging since day one. Please let us have upgrades on the App Store. I mean, talk about high tech stuff that should have been solved, I don't know, day one. If not day one, definitely by year one.
Yeah, do we have trials yet? Did trial offers, did that get added? So
they, we need that they achieve it through the in-app purchasing, right? Instead of just having a real model. It's silly. Like that you can't have upgrades in the store. It should be an embarrassment, but when you don't care, you're not embarrassed.
Yeah, fair
enough. They don't care. Speaking of which,
yep.
Maybe that's a natural segue about Apple products year in review.
Yeah, well, it is, and it is time. I hate to do a segue that actually makes sense, but you know, needs must when the devil drives. So topic number two today is looking back at 2018's products, and you know, because John and I both love the opportunity to bitch and complain.
So I guess that's your overall view, that it's worthy of bitch and complaint? Or I thought you might be happy.
I am happy about some things, actually. I am.
All right. What are you happy about?
Well, I do like my HomePod, even though it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And even
I shockingly agree.
Oh, wow. Yes, I am shocked. I am.
I have, just so you know, I have six HomePods. Sorry.
Oh, my God. I thought I was ridiculous for having three of them.
Yeah. I have six. Again, one of the great untouted uses is it's very good as a speakerphone.
Yeah.
The quality of the speakers is still poo in that it's, as an individual speaker, it's way overly bassy. True, but it is. And it should be embarrassing that Apple doesn't offer, an equalizer. On the phone or that sticks to it so that people can adjust it to taste.
Yep. We need the cheap microphone centric device.
We do.
For individual rooms.
It's nowhere near as good as, say, the Kef speakers for roughly the same price. That said, when you get a second one, it is much better than the singular one. It really is a good deal better. So they did a great job in that. And Siri has gotten less stupid.
Yeah, but she's still needs very stupid.
But she's gotten less stupid. She does answer some weird trivia and stuff that I ask her and definitions of words and all kinds of stuff. So she's improved this. You could feel her improvement throughout the year. So that's good. So overall, you know, decent product. I bought six of them, so I don't know if that actually says anything.
It doesn't. Yeah. It's you, dude. It doesn't necessarily say anything.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. You're right about that.
Let's see here. I also like the iPhone XS.
Well, I don't want to give them any credit for any new iPhones in the sense that you expect them to do that, because otherwise the company would outright fail, right? If they had no new iPhone, it would be beyond tragic for the stock, to put it mildly, and for the company. It is the sole driver of the company, unfortunately, for still. So that they put out the iPhone XS is kind of like, I don't give them a cookie for it. That they put out the iPhone XR, I do give them a cookie for.
XR and XS. But why are you going to give them a cookie for the XR?
Because I think they failed to find the sweet spot of kind of the more populous iPhone in the past. I think when they released the 5C, the plastic one, it was just too mediocre for people to be interested in. And they found kind of the right balance to do that. I wish the XR, if they were, in my opinion, smart, they should have made it probably $100 cheaper, so it was more in line with pricing of the 8 of the past, and make it the far more affordable phone, because they really have been gluttonous gougers this year. But that said, I think they found the right balance. Like, they could have the ultra high end phone. It doesn't have to have that many things above kind of the everybody's phone. And so I think they've honed in on that much better. I was very tempted to get the XR. I liked it in most ways. I the things that it didn't have, I generally didn't care about. I just wanted the super massive screen of the Max. So for me, that was the big thing. And I also wanted the 512 gigs, which they didn't offer on the XR. So those two things for me were, necessity might not be the right word, but were things I felt I needed. But otherwise, I was very tempted by the color. I think the XR looks cooler.
What are you putting on 512 gigs of storage? I mean, is this all that porn that you were doing research on?
Yeah, I don't understand. Nothing against folks that use the phone for porn. It just seems like there are better devices for this. But no, it's my music collection. Like over 500 gigs of music. Yeah. So this doesn't fit uncompressed, but at 256 kilobits, it fits a good amount. And then if you're going to do any 4K video or whatnot, you probably want at least 100 gigs free. Yeah, at any time to do that. So that's my use for it. And I actually have a lot of files from work on it.
In our iMessage chat group in the tech world, in the tech chat group that you run, which, by the way, I don't recommend. No one should feel jealous if they're not in that thing. I kid. I mostly kid. I'm kind of kidding. You're always railing against, like, not being able to put like a petabyte in your MacBook Pro. I mean, like, do you actually have all that storage that you're complaining about? Do you have that full?
You know, it's remarkable you would say this in a world that we live in where all of America is absolutely shocked that things they typed on Facebook would be used by other people in public. They're shocked. And so I am not a big believer in the cloud. Maybe the article I wrote for the Mac Observer that said the cloud is a lie might be a hint as to me being a fan.
Who's talking about the cloud? I'm asking.
Well, like, so if you're not saving it, what's on my, probably my photos library is probably
right, the porn again. We keep coming back to the porn.
Yeah, no, it is probably half a terabyte, which is
the pornification of your storage.
Yeah. Which is small compared to Walt. I mean, but Walt has good excuse. He has three kids. I do not. So he has a lot more on the photos and videos there, but that's not much. The music collection is another half. What I've done is, this is probably OCD, but after listening to Dr. Mac, I feel like I'm not very OCD. Every physical music CD, every physical DVD, every physical software piece that I've ever had, I have ripped a disk image of. So I have those. So now if, you know, all those original boxes burn up, that's a lot of storage.
Are you doing movies then, too?
I did DVDs. All my DVDs. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I do get it.
And then what I've done recently, which I recommend everyone do if you have a good enough scanner, I have scanned in all my old textbooks and thrown them the heck out. I've scanned in all the physical files of my finances and all that stuff, the stuff that was wasting ungodly numbers of file cabinets, and it's all searchable. It's text searchable. Like, it's incredible, right? So that stuff took a lot of space. So it adds up that I use in total about just under 11 terabytes is my world.
I get it now. I do get it now. I've always thought you were just complaining to complain because A, I know you, and B, I didn't know all the things you just said. So now I see that I've been wrong.
Yeah, and just the work stuff I do for you know, a living, that's an easy, like, and that needs to be always on where I am, about 2.5 terabytes of stuff, you know, because there's a lot of, you know, creative invention stuff on there, and there's videos and schematics and tons of text and whatnot. It's pretty beefy backstory, and that doesn't even include the server that we run, you know, that has a ton of stuff on it. So it's for real. It's not just for that. And I'm not a particularly heavy user. I mean, if you got people that are doing videos, serious videos and whatnot, they can eat up a 4 terabyte drive instantly, you know, with 4K video. That's nothing.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's nothing.
All right, so back to scoring Apple. The original question you asked is which ones I like. I definitely like the 11-inch iPad Pro. I've got it.
Did you love it? You got yours and you're enjoying it?
I got it, and I love it. I was upgrading from the first 9.7-inch iPad Pro. It's a nice big step up. with the
not bent.
Not mine was not bent.
Good.
Yeah, that was certainly a bonus. I enjoy that device immensely.
So how do you feel, by the way, with Apple's new stance of you're not laying it on a flat surface, right?
Balderdash, man. It is absolutely incomplete and total arrogant balderdash.
Disgusting. I mean, Steve Jobs, I don't think, would have put up with that.
But come on. He's the guy that said you're holding it wrong. Like, he's the guy we just made fun of.
That's true. He holding it wrong, but I don't think he would accept that craftsmanship part.
He accepted five dead pixels in a display.
Back in the day when that was, when that was the state of the art, I think that's all you could do. So, yeah, you know what? You may be right. You may be right. I'm speculating.
But yeah, I could be easily wrong. You know, I would like to think you're right, but I would also like to think that Apple wouldn't take the stance that it has. I mean, it's just completely, it's, like they're off their rocker. Yeah, if they think that's okay, there's nothing okay about that. And I haven't, for whatever reason, the subject hasn't come up on any podcast I've done. And I'm not the one who covered it for TMO. I cannot in any, I'm just going to get this out. Apple has lost its mind if they think that that's okay, because it's not okay.
We are in agreement.
It's not acceptable.
Especially when the iPad that I would have spec'd is basically, I think, between $2,500 and $2,800 out the door. By the time you add the cover keyboard, the pencil, Apple Care, which for this is a must because the thing is so costly, and New York State tax. Yeah, I think it was over $2,500 out the door.
Yeah, those things not only should like quality assurance should have kept them from going out the door, but if they made it out the door by mistake somehow, Apple should have been bending over backwards to replace those as fast as they could have.
Agreed. Just bizarre.
Yeah, it's bizarre. See, I love the Apple Watch Series 4.
Mm-hmm.
Love it, love it, love it. Still gaze down at my wrist adoringly.
Walt loves it.
And
for the same reasons you do. He loves the screen.
Yeah, love that screen. I love the infographic watch face. You didn't get one, did you?
No, it almost should make Apple stockholders fearful. There's a lot I didn't like and didn't get this year. And, you know, normally I just bought 6 HomePods. So that tells you like self-restraint is not amongst my amongst my virtues. Right. So that I didn't get these things because it was just my utter disgust. I refused to give them the money, not because of the issue of money. It's just I think they're basically scum in some of the things they've done this year with their products. But anyway, I don't want to detract you from your list of likes. I think the Series 4 is a totally great upgrade and worthy of it. I kind of don't like the roundy corners as much as I think you do, but they're not bad at all. And it's obviously a super worthwhile upgrade, and it has a lot of new value.
All right, fair enough. I also think the larger of the new iPad Pro models is fantastic. I haven't personally used it, but similarly, I like it similarly to the 11-inch. I like the $329 iPad for an entry-level iPad.
Agreed. I think that's the product of the year for Apple.
All right.
It's totally interesting. Totally ignored by all the technorati. But that thing was going on sale this year. $229 for the 32 gig, and I think $329 on sale during the Black Friday times for the 128 gig. I mean, holy mackerel, what a lot of value that thing is for that price. That's insane. Yeah, Pencil agreed. Works with it, everything. It's fantastic.
Agreed. I like the Apple Pencil 2. Now, this one's going to surprise you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it surprises me.
Okay.
I love my new MacBook Air. I am infuriated that Apple took away the i7 processor option. That annoys the crap out of me. But I ended up getting the faster 13-inch. I won't call it the fastest.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'll call it the faster 13-inch MacBook Air. I love it. I love that space gray finish on it. I used it all week while I was traveling and found it to be, you know, everything that I could have needed in a portable Mac. So while I hate the upgrade pricing on that device, while I don't love the base pricing on that device, And while I don't love the processor options on that device, I love the
device. How about the keyboard?
I love the it's great.
Okay.
The keyboard is fantastic. The trackpad's great. The screen's great. The form factor is amazing. And I found it to be everything that I needed.
So yeah, I guess I'm not surprised. I mean, on one level, I totally get it, because for the niche that it's filling, it's finally doing what it should have, which is provided a Retina display on MacBook Air, which is its most popular model. And this, you know, no one's really getting it to be a speed demon. So the lack of the I personally am offended at it too, but the lack of the i7 isn't the end of the world, because most people aren't doing that. And unlike the previous gen of MacBook Air, who did have an i7, which is roughly the exact same speed as the current top speed i5, right, model. They're almost identical in speed. But that previous gen, which is too many years old, by the way, it's disgusting it took them this long to update it. The low end was unusable. Like the 1.2 gigahertz garbage processor at the low end was... i3, it was disgusting. So it was unusable. So it's a positive. I mean, talk about, Stockholm syndrome here. Thank you for not beating as often as you used to, and getting rid of those bad processors. And, I see the point. It's a solid, fine, Air-ish type notebook for what it is. The thing that disgusts me is, It didn't get updated for what, 3 years?
Yeah, for sure.
So forget not just the 3 years. The what bothers me is that all of the tech, and particularly the Mac Tech Press, is in Stockholm syndrome, in that they're like, I am such a beaten person that I'm going to give them credit for basically putting in the totally pedestrian internals that are available today. It's not like they got a new CPU from, they just put like what's a 7-watt CPU you got, this i5, fine, we'll take it, right? Like there was nothing magical about what they did here. They slapped together current pieces that they should have been doing every year, and everyone's giving them like high marks for doing something they should have been doing every year, because everyone's so psychologically beaten down. And it disgusts me. It disgusts me that the deep pipeline that we waited 3 years for is just, let's get the common parts from the totally pedestrian.
That's not what he's talking about when he talks about the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Not what he's talking about.
Yeah, apparently, he's talking about some insane magic, because you've clearly admitted by implication there nothing's come out of the pipeline. So we're waiting for that total unicorn fart to fly out of his pipeline.
That's right. That is
sure.
Right. That is right.
Okay.
All right. So listen,
5 years and
counting. When the day comes that Tim Cook's Apple introduces a completely new product line, are you going to take back all this crap talking you've been doing?
Well, he did. This year he introduced a completely new product line, the 4 years overdue HomePod. So how's that?
No.
That's his pipeline.
Because I'm not counting that one either.
Uh-huh. That one doesn't count. So while it's inconvenient for you.
No, it's not inconvenient whatsoever. It's actually inconvenient to you. That was, in fact, a new product.
Yes, it is four years late.
Yeah, it was four years late.
So there's a common theme. The Air was 3 years late. The Mini was 4 years late. The Mac Pro is 5 years late and counting. The HomePod was 4 years late, but the pipeline's working just fine.
We haven't even talked about the Mac Pro.
Excuse me. And nor should we, because it's just going to make me more nuts than I already am.
Let's move on to the Mac Mini.
Sure. So is this amongst your I like it?
Nope.
You're surprised I like
nope.
it?
Nope. Too expensive. Upgrade pricing is insane. Insane.
And I'm
glad that it finally got updated after 5 years or 4 years or whatever it was.
And by update, meaning there's no longer storage expandability internally. Right. They tell you how spiteful these sons of sun thing are. The case is the exact same thing. So all they had to do was throw in a bracket and an NVMe connector. But out of spite, they've just left a hollow space in that thing. Say, yeah, we could have put in a drive here, a space for a drive. But you know what? That's how much we care.
Yeah, you don't need that.
Yeah, sure.
You don't need that. You don't need that.
But they painted it gray. That means it's pro, and pros just never want more storage. Never.
The new MacBook Pros that were announced this year, I still feel like we're in stepping stone mode. You know, they weren't huge upgrades, and upgrade pricing, again, remains out of control.
Gougy.
I don't like that Apple is doing that at all.
I hate it. I hate it, and I find it more insulting than the year before, because it has something I've wanted forever. They finally have an actual processor upgrade that is meaningful. They went from 2 to 4 cores in the 13-inch, and they went from 4 to 6 cores on the 15-inch models. It's a super meaningful grunt thing. They have actually good video cards, particularly with the Vegas, which I'm sure the people that got the maxed out 560 models are super thrilled that Apple just kept that quiet and 4 months later made them feel like they just shot themselves in the foot by getting what is now no longer a meaningful top-end machine, but at least they're upgrading it. So, you know, between the two sins, I'd take the one where they're actually doing updates. And the topped-out machine is over $7,000 list, and by the time you walk out with AppleCare and whatever, you're talking an $8,000 and tax here in New York, you're talking an $8,000 machine for a 4 terabytes of storage. To put that in context, the upgrade price for the 4 terabyte drive is $3,200. You can today buy a 7,600 gigabyte or 7.6 terabyte SSD for $1,250.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not the exact same thing, but you can get something of the exact type of NVMe memory for less than half the price at the very least. So it's just disgusting pricing on that. And the killer is, why would you ever want to upgrade that machine when you're a pro? Clearly, you're just, you know, 4 terabytes will be just like 640K when Bill Gates said, who would ever want more? 4 terabytes, you will never want to upgrade. It's ludicrous that that's this is my opinion. It is not a pro machine by definition if it doesn't have upgradable storage. Period. End of story.
I think, and I hear what you're saying there, and I mostly agree with you. I think that Apple is simply decided to redefine pro.
Well, to being meaningless and not pro. They've defined pro to be what I said that they should call the addition, right? Posers and executives that don't actually care about professional use and storage and whatnot. And that's fine. That's a seriously well-heeled and a very viable and an important sector. But it shouldn't be confused with pros that actually have to, you know, use a truck and get work done. And if you don't make a machine, if the machine has no expandable storage, it's not a professional machine. So that makes it totally fine. I get why you have an Air, right? I get why you have the regular MacBook. I get why you have an iMac. And that may be cool with those machines. They're not pro machines. And I'm lying. Here's the statement that I'm slightly lying about. Apple makes no pro machines because by that definition, they make no machines that have expandable storage. There is one exception, the 5-year-old Mac Pro. Actually has a removable storage, whatever, DIMM or whatever the format. It's a weird custom format, but you can get upgrades for it. So that 5-year-old machine is currently the only machine that has expandable storage. It's disgusting.
Yep.
And in 2018, when, let me see, 15 terabyte drives go for $500, Apple decides that, you know, on the iMac, which they haven't updated in over a year and a half, 3 terabytes is more than anyone would ever need.
Yeah.
Why would you need more?
And you're going to pay what for it?
Yeah. And by the way, it's crazy. They're going to make you pay a crazy upgrade price for that 3 terabyte spinner. And the best part is that 3 terabyte drive is historically the most error prone drive ever produced by all the manufacturers.
Yep.
So that's in there as a kicker bonus. Yeah, but you know, Apple really cares about the Mac. They totally care about the Mac.
I agree. So then we have the other new products we have, and we are going to be running out of time here shortly. We've got Mojave. We'll start there.
Mojave is nice. I don't have it on any of my machines. Jenny has it on hers, and I play with it, and it's nice. But my 2011 MacBook Pro won't run it. I mean, I could force it to run it, but I'm not going to. And my Cheese Grater Mac Pro can run it, and I have an awesome video card that makes it run it. But I have personal reasons for because of the move and whatnot why I haven't done that yet. But in playing with it on her laptop, I like it. I mean, there's really not much more.
So. The removal of back to my Mac is infuriating.
That is crazy.
It is infuriating, and I am sick to death of Apple deciding that features that are used by 2 to 5% of its user base is something that needs to be cut. I'm sick to I am tired of that.
By their logic, only 2%, probably less than 2% use Photoshop, so we should just not provide any hooks for Photoshop to ever work.
Yeah, it just exist. Get rid of it. Just don't even need it.
It's just stupid. Yeah. It's stupid. It's just completely willfully blind.
What's
to pros.
In Mojave is solid, and I like it. The some of the things that they cut out are mystifying and infuriating.
Yeah, it's been their tradition, right? Like they've constantly cut out features in the old routers. Remember releasing software that was less capable than the predecessors, and then killing the routers after that. And it's just their model. Someone posted a stat. It was an interesting stat that. Currently in 2018, Apple spent 18.5 times the amount on R&D that they did in 2007 when they released the iPhone, right? When they were still releasing updates to every piece of software, to iPods, to everything was being regularly updated. And by the way, they released a mega new product with the iPhone. 18.5 times.
Yeah, it's going into that pipeline, brother.
Yeah, that pipeline's deep.
It is deep.
So deep.
Thank you. I accept your apologies. Yeah, so then we have iOS.
Barry White can't speak deep enough for how that pipeline's gone. But 18.5 times. They're doing more. They're wasting more and more money to produce less and less. It's just it should be their company motto at this point.
iOS 12, watchOS 5, tvOS 12, I think, or 10, or I don't know, whatever. HomePod OS, all those things got updated.
Solid for me. Solid. Actually, I'll give them super props for iOS 12 because it made older phones like the iPhone 6 very much more usable. And you know what's sad is the iPhone 6. It's funny. Apple's in this case being incorrectly pummeled for them, trying to obsolete stuff when they're making this. The iPhone 6 is so ancient that there are now frequencies on T-Mobile that it can't use. So T-Mobile is saying, don't bring an iPhone 6 to this network because it won't work in a lot of areas. That's how old it is. So it's literally hardware is now obsolete,
right?
With just carrier waves. It's incredible. And Apple made that device totally snappy with iOS 12.
Yeah, I like watchOS 5 as well. TVOS still can't remember that I have my output going out to my HomePod. So it's horrible. Resets it to HDMI. That drives me nuts. Otherwise, tvOS is fine.
It's not an update worth mentioning.
And HomePod OS, which I think is actually technically just iOS 12, is part of what we were talking about earlier, where HomePod is becoming more useful. Siri is becoming better.
Yes, agreed.
So, yeah. All right. So here's the funny thing. We certainly spend a lot more time bitching and complaining than we did praising. But mm-hmm. I think that for like both of us, it is at worst a 50-50 report card, and it might actually be more like a 60-40 with 60% good and 40% bad.
I don't know. I'll defer actually, to your numbering, but for me,
back in after.
Yeah, for me, it felt like this year was very split down the middle. It was just very there was much negative, perhaps maybe the quantity of the negativity wasn't as high in number, but the severity of the negativity on some of these things was so deep that it counterweighed it.
But HomePod, the entry level iPad, iPhone XR, Apple Watch Series 4, and the iPad Pro models. iOS 12 and Mojave. That's seven products that got some varying degree of a thumbs up or enthusiastic endorsement.
Sure.
iPhone XS got a positive from me and a you don't care from you.
Yeah, it's fine.
Right? The NBA got a sort of grudging acceptance from me.
And a grudging non-acceptance from me.
With complaints. Mm-hmm. from me.
Yes.
Mac Mini, we both poo-pooed. The MacBook Pro, we were met at best.
I'm not very negative on it.
Yeah, you said a couple of nice things about it, but I think we both had whining complaints. So that's like the majority of the products we actually gave a thumbs up to.
Yeah, but it's kind of the lack of care, I guess. Like I said, you're right. By quantity, it was an up year. My problem is it's such a lack of care for the Mac in every way that to me, everything about Apple boils down to the Mac Pro. If they are tone deaf on the Mac Pro and it doesn't have expandable storage and it's not somewhere in the spectrum more towards the cheese grater than it is towards the trash can Mac, it just tells me Apple doesn't care at all. It's time for me to start looking for a new operating system. Maybe it takes me 3 or 4 years of Hackintoshes or whatever to get there, but I'm done. Like, this is a company that clearly just wants to make phones and nothing else, and that's fine. But I have no more interest in this company, which is an amazing statement. At least to myself.
Yeah, whatever, dude. Come on. What are you going to do? Use Windows? Linux?
I'll probably make a Hackintosh and then try to figure out if there some Linux or something that I'm going to work on.
You're not going to work on it. God, I cannot even, like I'm going to go hide in a nuclear bunker in anticipation of the complaints that you're going to fly out of your mouth if you ever went to Linux.
One of the Linux variants is a GNU step, which is basically an OpenStep clone of the old NextStep.
Nothing but complaint. Dude,
NextStep in many ways is still better than macOS. I hate to tell you, but it's true.
Listen, that may be the case, but the stream of profanity-laden complaints coming
from
you.
Dude, the stream of profanity-laden complaints is on the current system and for the last...
No, that's the point.
It's going to... That changes not at all.
It's going to, be amplified like a... Oh, because there's no way. What do you... You are going to continue...
I'm not going to argue against the chance of me increasing my quantity of vitriol because that's constant. It's like entropy. Yes, it's always increasing. All right, we've established that. So is my cursing. But I'm not sure that's telling of one thing or another. But yeah, I'm actually, and I'll tell you more. If the Mac Pro isn't what I like, to me, it's a signal that I need to divest of all my Apple stock. Start getting rid of it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even vaguely go that far.
Yep.
No. Yeah. We're gonna have. We're gonna have some tasty arguments. Well, let's actually hope that we don't. Let's just hope. I know. I'm the one who's willfully optimistic, and you're the professional curmudgeon and the general all around grunt bucket. But let's just hope that we're both just delighted and pleased and blown away by the Mac Pro.
I do, and I hope. And listen, you've been very. And you know what? One wild card that may not be crazy to expect is. What happens when they introduce Apple processor-powered Macs?
Yeah.
That could be quite an earth-shifting thing that may mean all kinds of cool things. Like all of a sudden, iOS is runnable on Macs. And maybe the fridge toaster thingy might come out. And even if it doesn't, isn't that interesting that iOS things can run? And maybe the libraries start merging. Who knows? There's plenty that can shock us. But to me, for whatever, and I may be wrong about it, but a big canary in the coal mine and bellwether and any other cliches you want to insert there is that Mac Pro. Are they awake? Did they hear? Did they learn?
Man, that's only a canary in the coal mine, a bellwether for the Mac product line, not for the rest of Apple.
Sure.
Yes. Okay. All right. I accept your apology. So, listen, I want to thank you very, very, very much for
making you seem like you're not a curmudgeon.
come on.
When you know you are.
I'm a teddy bear and I am woefully optimistic and you know it.
Well, relative to me, absolutely.
All right,
so I agree.
Let me do this thing and then say that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com or head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Bases by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week, and I really, really, really want to thank John.
And thank you.
And with that...